Good evening, and welcome to tonight's live telephone town hall with Congressman Sam Farr. This new technology allows Congressman Farr to chat with hundreds of his Central Coast neighbors while sitting in his office here in Washington. In a few moments, we'll be joined by the Congressman, but I'd first like to explain what will happen during our hour together. At any time during the call, if you would like to ask Congressman Farr a question, please press star 3 on your telephone. You will continue to hear the conference call until one of our town hall assistants can join you and take your question. Please be ready to give them your name, city, and your question. This will allow us to keep the discussion flowing and reduce repeat questions. If we can't get to your question during the call, you will also have the chance to leave a voice message for the congressman at the end of the call. It's a little extra incentive to join us for the whole hour. And finally, a recording of this teleconference will be available on our website tomorrow morning, so feel free to visit www.far.house.gov and listen. Now, I would like to introduce Congressman Sam Farr. He has served the Central Coast for more than 30 years as a county supervisor, state representative, and now congressman. And again, if you would like to ask the congressman a question at any time, please press star 3 and a call screener will be with you shortly. And now, joining us is Congressman Farr.
Hi, this is Sam Farr. I'm here in humid Washington, much rather be at home. I'm very excited that I'll be able to talk to you tonight. I'm sitting in my Washington office, and this is an incredible technology that allows us to have these tele-town hall meetings, and I hope you enjoy them as much as I have in the past. I just want to remind everybody that I'm also going to be in the district for the entire month of August and be hosting my annual town hall meetings throughout Monterey County. And what I'd like to do is get into some of the issues that we're dealing with right now. I'm talking mainly to a lot of Salinas residents, and I really empathize with the problems that that Monterey County and Salinas is having right now. Our unemployment rate is higher than the state average and double that of the national average. We've had a record number of gang slayings this year, auto thefts and burglaries. The crime rate is incredibly high and a real problem. In the meantime, we have these gas prices out of sight. We have foreclosure going on in homes, and some of our businesses are really on the ropes. It's a tough time for us, and I'm very much trying to end the war in Iraq so that we can get our soldiers home and get the finances that we're spending over there spent here on those kinds of needs. We have accomplished some things that I think are historic. We're just about to wrap up a new GI Bill for veterans, and that will be not only help people in our area, but will help the learning institutions, educational institutions in our area. We've passed a farm bill that for the first time will speak to the needs of the Salinas Valley and ag research and nutrition programs, trying to get fresh fruits and vegetables into our schools and into our feeding programs. And it's the first time that sort of specialty crops, which are California's mainstay, are really going to get some attention and not like the Midwest bailouts that happen with the commodity issues. We're working on some issues here on foreclosure, issues to try to make it easier. My recommendation there is everybody needs to go back and talk to lenders first, because they really don't want to necessarily throw people out on the street and then end up with a house not being able to sell it. So rather than go into a lot of things other than this unemployment issue, because it's right on my mind, because today we voted on it, and we voted on a procedural vote that would have taken a two-thirds vote to pass, and it failed that by a few Republicans that didn't join us. All the Democrats passed for it, and some Republicans, but we will be revoting on that tomorrow in a regular order and getting a majority vote. It will extend unemployment compensation up to 13 weeks beyond the 39 weeks that are available now. And relief will run through till the end of, into the future. But I'm really excited that we're at least being able to reach out and have people have some resources for almost the 9 months of the year for while they're trying to find another job or get relocated in their training. Gas issues are a real problem, and I'll just open it up to questions on that because there's all kinds of different factions arguing about that. But I'd like to now hear your questions, and again, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Congressman. Now we're going to move on to our discussion. For those of you who just arrived, to ask the Congressman a question, please press star 3, and a town hall assistant will be with you in a minute. Congressman, as we have more people joining the call, I'd like to start the Q&A session with a question that's on many people's mind, the housing crisis. The Central Coast already faces sky-high housing costs, and foreclosures are only making the problem worse. What is being done to fix this?
Well, it's a tough problem. Locally, we have thousands of homes that face foreclosure in Monterey County. We expect 3,000 foreclosures this year. We had 1,500 last year. And more than 2 million families are at risk of losing homes nationally. We provided a stimulus package, and by the way, out of that, I think most of the callers might have received a stimulus check. If you haven't done that, if you haven't received that yet, you ought to get a hold of my office tomorrow, and we'll try to track it down. What we've done is we've raised the Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac loan limit to $729,000. It's still lower than what is needed in California, but much greater than the $400,000 limit that was on it before. And that'll make it easier to refinance or buy homes in our high-priced markets. We are also trying to help families avoid foreclosure. We've increased the loan limits for the Federal Housing Administration also to $729,000. And we've expanded the affordable mortgage loan opportunities for families of foreclosure, and we've stimulated the first-time home buyers. We have a lot of local counseling programs that we've set up. Monterey County Housing Alliance is a HUD-approved counseling agency in Monterey County. They can handle a case-by-case basis. We have the State Department of Real Estate in Sacramento working on fraud cases. We have the local housing authority, and Salinas has a local number for that, and the housing authority in San Benito and San Cruz County. And then we've developed a predatory lending task force with the Housing and Economic Rights Advocates, which is an Oakland group, and it deals with victims of predatory lenders, and they have a number that I could give you if you're interested. And then we have a federal hotline where you can pick up a lot of information. But my personal recommendation is that people have got to get hold of the lender of the company that holds their mortgage and see if they can renegotiate a affordable mortgage with a payment schedule.
Okay. Thank you, Congressman. For those of you that are just joining us, remember to dial star 3, and you'll be connected to an assistant who will take your call. Now we're going to take a call from Elva from Salinas about gangs. Elva, you're on the line with Congressman Farr.
Hello?
Now?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Senator. Congressman.
Yes.
My question is, when kids move from out of town, out of state, and they are good kids and good students, and then we have this Central Coast section of that's supposed to deal with all our sports in our area, and they don't let these kids play because they come from another place. You know, that is where they give the opportunity to the kids to join these gangs.
I'm not sure. I don't know of any law that prevents that. It may be a local issue of...
It tells me here in this paper, this letter that I got from them,
mm-hmm.
It tells me that this is for everybody coming from out of state, from anywhere, that this is, these are the rules from the Central Coast section. There's an email here.
All right.
That gives you...
Let me look into it. I mean, what we've tried to do a lot of gang prevention, and with just after school sports and issues like that. In some cases, at the college level, and you know, from school districts, you have to live within the school district. And if you're from out of state, then sometimes the cost at the university level is the out of state tuition fees. But I don't know of anything like that that requires for just participation in after-school sports or Little League or anything like that. But if it's a problem, we'll try to get to it. I'm in constant contact with Mayor Dennis Donahue, and we know that in order to really tackle this gang problem, one, it's going to take financial resources, but two, it's going to take, and more than anything else, it's just in a wide across-the-board section, sort of it takes a village to raise our youth today, and we're going to have to take the whole village in order to prevent these gangs from being able to succeed in Salinas.
Thank you, Congressman. Callers, remember to dial *3 to ask a question of the congressman. Now we're going to move to a question from Dave Hawkins from Salinas about gas prices. Dave, you are on the phone with Congressman Farr.
How are you doing, Mr. Farr? You probably don't remember me, but I met you at the Boy Scout camp last year.
Yes, hi, Dave. How are you?
How you doing, sir? I have some little bit of griping about Congress. How can they allow the gas companies raise the gas so much every day? Gas is going up every day. And shouldn't Congress be able to mandate the price control of those gas prices?
Well, Congress can do lots of things as long as it has the votes and the signature of the president to do it, and that's where we still are at loggerheads. Let me put this into some kind of perspective of it all. First of all, we import a good deal of our oil. We get most of our oil from Venezuela, but we get a great deal of oil from the Middle East, and that oil is sold on a world market price. It's not something that the United States said. And the trading of oil is all done in dollars. And when the dollar is weakened, obviously the cost goes up. It's also a speculative market, and it's an unregulated market, and it's traded in the United States on the commodities exchange in Chicago. And there's a lot of interest now to looking into that we have not regulated that commodities exchange as an unregulated private sector of Ward, and we're looking into that because many people speculate that the speculation on oil has driven the price up about $50 over what it's really valued. And if we could bring down that speculative cost, obviously the cost per barrel would come down. The other problem you're having is that not only the United States is driving cars and running gasoline-dependent machinery, the rest of the world, particularly India and China, very populated countries, are into the Industrial Revolution, and they are buying cars, and they're filling them up. So the demand for gasoline, for oil, is way up, and that demand is driving the price up along with these other things. Now, what we've tried to do in Congress is to, first of all, we have the big picture here is global warming. We sometimes forget that because some people say we ought to just drill, drill, drill. The fact of the matter is that we've already sold millions of tracts and leases for oil drilling of federal lands, and the oil companies are just sitting on those leases. And, you know, there's no need to go and lease more until they exercise their rights on those. Secondly, drilling for oil isn't going to solve the problem. It's certainly not going to help global warming. We've got to find alternatives, and they've got to be cost-effective. And in order to do that, you have to give tax incentives. And we have voted for an energy bill that really encourages investment in the brain trust that our country has, and a lot of that brain trust is in California. I mean, alternative energy and motors and things like that will be a big economic boom for California because that's where the people who invent those things live. We were failed to get the Republican support, and the president has indicated he'd veto the bill. We tried to do the surcharge profits of five big oil companies, and that was defeated with lack of vote support. Whenever we try to go after the oil companies here in Congress, the Congress members from the oil states, and I might add the White House, because all those people in the White House got their training in business in the oil business, and they look at the world, the whole world, from the standpoint of oil, and they're going to protect those interests. So it is a difficult battle, and I don't see us getting any handle on this until we sort of have a revolution at the polls in November.
Okay. Thank you, Congressman. For those of you just joining us, remember, dial *3 to ask your question of the congressman. Now we are going to take a question from Tom O'Neill from Salinas. Tom has a question about the medical situation. Tom, are you...
Thanks for talking, Representative. The main problem here is that there are less and less doctors accepting Medicare. It's supposedly because there's not enough reimbursement. They don't have enough money back there in Washington to fund the whole thing. That's one factor, and if you can't get with a GP, you can't get to a specialist, so that your Medicare card is equivalent to, a $3 bill. The other factor is that because of the high costs here, doctors are not being attracted to the Monterey Peninsula because it's just too expensive to live. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there very much. Writing your notes down. Dr. O'Neill, I'm very involved in this. First of all, in the Medicare reimbursement, there's two parts. One is that the reimbursement rate is supposed to be cut, and if we don't take emergency action, which we're working on as we speak before the end of this month, and that'd be cut another 10%, which I think would just make doctors cave in or give up on Medicare, and that would be a tragedy because that's a great insurance program, and it, as you know, there's no alternative for a lot of senior citizens, unlimited income. The best thing to do is make Medicare work for the community. Unfortunately, in our area, the Medicare reimbursement rate in Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Benito County is lower than the reimbursement rate in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's about almost a $50 difference, I think. And so doctors are really upset that they can't get, because the cost of living, as you pointed out, is just as high as the San Francisco Bay Area. We're trying to fix that in a bill that's in the Senate right now that would... bail out the Medicare cut. I mean, it would stop the Medicare cut. It would postpone it. And these are all costs. The cost to California for this 8 counties that by law should be getting a better reimbursement rate, including the 3 I just mentioned, is about $75 million just for 18 months. So all of these things are trying to balance out not only the equity of it, but the payment of it. The other thing I'm doing, which... I'm really excited about is that we have a large military component in Monterey County, students at the DLI, Defense Language Institute, and the Naval Postgraduate School. Many of them married and have their families. Their families are on a federal insurance called TRICARE. It's like Medicare, but it's for people under 65. And the TRICARE reimbursements are tied to the Medicare reimbursements, so those are low. And we have doctors, for example, that the Peninsula doctors won't take pediatric patients, the children of these dependents. So we're trying to build a unique combination of active duty military dependents and veterans who are living, we have 28,000 veterans living in our area, a new clinic at Fort Ord. And in that, we would also be able to rent out some space to private clinicians and doctors who won't have to pay this higher real estate value. And we think that we can retain some doctors that way. So we're fighting this on a lot of fronts, but I really appreciate your concern. And as you know, we've got problems with Natividad Hospital and its ability to stay financially afloat. And it never stops. But until we have universal health care and everybody's insured in this country and we can start managing care much better, I don't think we're going to find an easy answer to these questions. I appreciate your concern.
Thank you, Congressman. Now we're going to have a question from Glenn in Salinas about low-income housing. Glenn, are you there?
Yes, thank you. I honor America, and I'm proud to be an American, and I thank the U.S. government for housing me in a low-income housing situation, but tell me the truth. Do people still care about Mexicans that come here to work? And, why isn't there any low-income housing? Are you trying to mechanize everything?
Am I trying to, excuse me, what was the last part?
The government trying to... mechanized and modernization program or something? Try to drive Mexican laborers out of California or something? Because I've been looking at the paper articles, and it seems the U.S. government's really two-faced about that wishy-washy, I think.
Well, it's not wishy-washy. There's a strong law that Congress has enacted regarding illegal immigration, and there's a law to enforce it, and it's really having an impact on ag areas where you have a lot of undocumented workers working hard, not breaking any laws, but nonetheless without papers, and many of them are married and have kids, and it gets very complicated. Affordable housing is an issue that is the government doesn't build housing. It's all done by the private sector. We give private builders tax incentives to build mixed income and low income housing. We put low income housing in with mixed income. We don't want to create ghettos of poor people or ghettos of rich people. We want to combine communities that they've always been, where everybody lives together in a community. And those incentives are out there, and you know, with the housing market as flat as it is, there's not a lot of interest in building right now. But I've done more than that, and that's because Fort Ord was land that is owned by the federal government, given to the local community, Seaside Marina and the County of Monterey, and worked with those, the FORA board, in insisting that we have a large percentage of affordable housing. So that when that housing gets built out there, there will be 400 or 500 homes, sold and or rented at very, very low prices for people. And I'm encouraging every community to include an inclusionary zoning, and that of all the housing they're going to build, that a percentage of that has to remain affordable. Because if we don't keep that housing, we're going to lose our workforce. And we lose our workforce, they have to commute long distances. That means we have more and more traffic problems. It means the cost of labor goes up. It means that businesses may not stay in business. And we've begun to have a real problem in just doing what we've traditionally done, and particularly for the economic underbase of Monterey County, which is based on tourism because of our beautiful land, and agriculture because of our unique coastal ag climate and soils. Those industries are job dependent, and they don't pay the world's best salary, so the people who are in those jobs are either have to find housing locally, or as you pointed out, they have to live far, far away, and then that ties up all our roads. So it is one of those things that if you try to want to fix the traffic problems, you also got to fix the housing problems, and you got to make them affordable so that people who are paid the wages locally can afford to live here. And that's a very, very strong priority for me.
Thank you, Congressman. For those callers just joining us, I would like to remind you to press *3 if you'd like to ask a question, and a caller will be with you, or a caller or screener will be with you shortly. Now we're going to go with a question from Victoria in Salinas about curfews. Victoria, are you there?
Yes.
Hello, Victoria. This is Sam Farr. How are you?
Good evening, Congressman. My question is, installing a curfew in Salinas, do you think that would be a good idea to deter a lot of people from committing crimes, to help with the crime?
Well, I think that you have to do everything. I'm not sure that, if you make a rule that you have to have curfew, then you also have to enforce it, and that becomes problematic because you may not have enough folks to enforce it, and some parents will enforce it themselves, but those that don't, then you have to have government enforce it. And what do you do to those kids? I think what you need, what we really need to do, and I'm this gang problem is really serious. It's not local. It's a national and international gang. It seems that because Salinas is right in the central part of California, that it become the battleground between the gangs of the South and the gangs of the North. And these are tough gangs, and they're influenced by people that are very sophisticated and have money and doing a lot of bad things. And it seems to me we have to go after them in a really tough way. But the citizens have to help, because you don't have any, the law enforcement doesn't have any backup. The citizens are the people who can report things that are unnormal or different in the community or problems that are in the community, really have to take an active role. And we can't just delegate it to something that's a part of the city of Salinas or the part of Monterey County. A gang problem in Salinas is a gang problem for Carmel and King City and everybody else. It's our backyard. It's our community. And we've all got to participate in it. Now, we're getting federal money. About half of the money being spent is federal money. It's not easy to get. It's I'm very critical of the federal government. We're putting a lot of money into Homeland Security looking for terrorists, but we're not putting money into looking for gangs that essentially are just operating the same way terrorists do. So I look at gangs in our neighborhood as terrorists, and I think that we ought to use every resource we can to go after them. I think that their parents are undocumented and they let their kids out who are doing this stuff. We ought to make sure that they get deported. I'm a hardliner on gang suppression. But you can't just do it on suppression alone. You have to have also social services. You have to have opportunities to get an education, not drop out of school, and an opportunity to get a job that pays enough to be able to stay in the community. You have to build self-esteem in kids that may come from families where there is no self-esteem, and it's a lot of work. And that's why I say it takes a village. I think Dennis Donahue is doing a great job. I'm working very closely with him. We talk regularly about what we can do, and if there's another program out here at the federal level, I'm going to try to get it to help Salinas.
Thank you very much, Congressman. As a reminder to all of our callers, if you have a question to ask Congressman Farr, press star 3. Now we're going to go with a question from Anita from Salinas about mammograms. Anita, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hi. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Anita, how are you?
I'm good. I have a question about why isn't there somewhere, I don't think any state has this, where a woman can go once a year, she can make her appointment, and maybe for $50 or $75, get a mammogram for the people who don't have health insurance, and or even a pap smear, because in the long run, I think that would save the government so much money. I found a lot.
Hello?
Congressman?
I believe that Planned Parenthood would give you all of those services, and I know that Natividad Hospital is also another one for with people without resources. California has done a lot to create a breast cancer registry so we can really begin to see what the patterns are in California. We have a lot of women's health networks are active in our area. We have community clinics throughout our area, the Farm Workers Clinic in several cities in the Salinas Valley. I think if there is any woman that needs, and being married to a woman, having only one child, and having my sister having breast cancer, and my mother dying of cancer, I'm very, very, very sensitive to these issues, and if there's any particular problem somebody has, please call Nancy DeSerpa in my Salinas office, and we will try to handle it for you. But thank you for your call. It's obviously something we have to tackle in a big way, and universal health care will help get access for everyone.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Again, callers, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, press star 3. We have a question from Sister Rosa Dolores from Salinas about a planned community in Pajaro. Sister, you're live with Congressman Farr.
Thank you.
Hi, Sister. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. This is wonderful.
Thank you for listening in and asking a question. I've always enjoyed working with you. You're really you're an angel in our community.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So are you. And the question that I have is has to do with Pajaro and the Corps of Engineers and the river, Pajaro River. Without any anything being done in regards to the solution, the levees and all this, and this involves the Corps of Engineers, which is the federal government, nothing is being considered for Pajaro. Even though there's in the county there's the general plan, Pajaro is just considered a priority, but we've tried to find out what the definition of priority is, but we don't really know. And local politicians are not really helping us in that.
Well, the river, the Corps of Engineers is working on the rebuilding of the levees, and that plan has been designed. You know, we had a lot of community meetings, and I think you attended every one of them. That doesn't really help any of the social issues that Pajaro is facing. I'm a heretic in my county because I was on the Monterey County Board of Supervisors, and I've seen how Monterey County ignores Pajaro. I thought that maybe it ought to be annexed to Watsonville and you'd get much better services. I'm not sure that that's what people want to do, but from a governance standpoint, it's right on the edge of the city, and the city really is the first responder for fire or police or anything like that. And most of the activities that Pajaro residents receive are from the city of Watsonville, but it is an unincorporated area. It's an important area because that's where the train from the north to the south comes through Pajaro Station there, and that's where the junction is to take the train that goes up to the sand plant every week. You know, we're trying to make these rails into future transportation systems, and if that, I think Pajaro has a great spot and can do some development. I've just, you know, whatever I can do to help you, I've really appreciated your ability to organize and get health care brought out to the field so the workers can get some counseling there and certainly get all the kinds of workplace needs that they have and the ability you've done to educate women and families about the services that are available. So if there's something more I can do, I'll come and see you next time I'm in Pajaro, which ought to be in a few weeks.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Again, callers, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, press *3. We now have a question from Chris Bays in Salinas about racism. Chris, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Thank you. Mr. Farr, I had just gotten out of grade school just yesterday, and I have seen a lot of racism going around in the schools. And I'm thinking that has something to do with the gang activity and the gang activity. Two races getting mad, two different race gangs getting mad because racial comments have been going around, and then gunfire going throughout the city and then hurting innocent lives. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys have anything planned for that or not.
Well, I'm working with the city and the county, which are the governments that deal with the impacts at the local level, at the federal level, and in Congress. We take care of sort of the big stuff, you know, at all 50 states, and we put money into programs, educational programs, and to cultural programs and so on, but it's up to the communities to get those funds and spend them as they see fit. Now, I'm very concerned because I think that there's always been an inherent racism in Monterey County, but at the same time, we also have to celebrate the fact that when Fort Ord was established, it integrated the Monterey Peninsula, and when the Defense Language Institute was established, it diversified the Monterey Peninsula, and I think the Navy School professionalized it by having the first PhD-granting institution. We now have Cal State Monterey Bay and University of California. And I think that, you know, communities need this dialogue. This dialogue is something that a lot of communities are engaged in. Perhaps a forum like that ought to be established in Salinas. I lived in the Peace Corps, and I was a minority in another land, and I know the culture of poverty, having lived in it. And a lot of this is racism, is lack of education, a lack of understanding. And if I think there is that going on in the gangs, although the gangs seem to be Hispanic and Hispanics killing Hispanics. But as you know, there's gang symbols and gang values and gang culture. And as their names indicate, the Sorteños and Norteños, there's territorial areas here. It gets very sophisticated, but I take your observation, particularly your age being in school, very seriously, and I'll talk to Dennis Donahue, the mayor of your city, and perhaps the educational leaders there to see if we can initiate something.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Again, callers, if you have a question for Congressman Parr, press star 3 anytime during the call. Our next question comes from Diana from Salinas. Diana has a question about green technology. Diana, you are live with Congressman Parr.
Hello, Congressman.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How can I? What's your question?
It's about making more efficient green energy, like all that technology, more affordable. Like, is there anything going on, like any laws being passed to make it like more affordable to like lower class, middle class, any?
Well, I'm very glad you asked, because that is exactly where America is headed, is that we are a country that is usually one of the first in technology, because we have such good educational programs and we have a lot of people that are very creative in this country. I think it's due to our diversity of cultures that have a lot of ways of thinking sort of outside the box. And what, because of global warming and the world's concern about that, countries are going to have to move to being green, and the United States should move faster than anybody because we consume so much of the world resources. So, and as this country's, United States of America, adopts policy on green building and the whole gamut of recycling and so on, and using efficient, fuel-efficient automobiles or transportation systems, that technology will be developed in our area. And I just, you look at all the technology that Salinas Valley's developed in getting lettuce into a bag and things like that. So, yes, there's a great big future of it. And what's happening is the state of California is ahead of all the other states, ahead of the federal government. And Santa Cruz County has hired somebody, and I'm getting to your question, which is there's a lot of things you can do locally, even in your own home, in your own neighborhood and school, and that's to learn what kind of technology you can convert in your own home, like changing light bulbs into those efficient light bulbs. That makes a big savings on your energy bill. I was mentioned that Santa Cruz has hired a person to look at all the building codes and planning codes to see how they can upgrade those to be more sensitive to green technology and green building. And I think Monterey County will follow suit soon because the constituents are demanding it. And obviously this cost of fuel is just driving everybody into thinking, how can we get a better bang for our buck by doing something that isn't so expensive as having to rely on fossil fuels to run engines and power our heaters and things like that. So thank you for asking.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Again, callers, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, press star 3 anytime during the call. Now we have a question from Gary Fortman from Salinas about the traffic in the Monterey Peninsula. Gary, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hello, sir.
Hi, Gary.
I have a question. I live in Salinas. I work in Monterey, and I deal with both sides of the peninsula of traffic. I was wondering, apparently, locally, they're not doing much about the traffic problem. It's very congested at certain points of the day, and I'm just wondering, with a lot of new homes going in at the old Fort Ord, when are they going to do anything about the traffic?
Well, Gary, you asked the best question, because if you heard my earlier response, I think it's if we can get these communities all to take their responsibility for building affordable housing. And what is affordable housing? It's a house that whatever salary you're making, you could buy a home close to where you work. And as you know, that's not feasible in Monterey County. And that's wrong. It was, you know, I grew up here. I grew up in Carmel, which is now an unaffordable community. And everybody in that town worked in town. Same thing in Pacific Grove. And you rarely ever had to leave town because all your needs were there. And frankly, we walked a lot. People didn't have cars. And what the peninsula is the only way to get to the Monterey Peninsula is on a two-lane road. You can go from Marina to the Monterey Peninsula on the freeway, but to get to Marina, to Castroville, you've got to come on Highway 156, and coming over Highway 68 as you go, or Dan Blanco Road, or even coming through Carmel Valley or up the Big Sur River, there's no way you can get to the Monterey Peninsula without traveling on a two-lane road. So if we're going to build for traffic needs, we're going to have to expand those. And the only road that's on this improvement plan, it's expensive expansion, is the road between Castroville and Highway 101. That won't help your commute from Salinas. We've tried to work with the bus transit system to get routes that are really practical and people can use them and that are really efficient. We're moving really well in that area, I think. I mean, there are other cities in the world who people just love their bus system because it is so convenient. We haven't gotten there yet, but we're working on it. And I don't know, I'm just, this gas thing is driving me nuts. I filled up my wife's car last Saturday in the mouth of the valley, and I think the gas thing was $4.60 a gallon, and just to fill her car cost me $100. So it's tragic, and I'm sorry that you have to commute. I would hope that we would be able to have communities where people can live in them and work in them without having to drive long distances to get there. Of course, I have to fly all the way across the country to get here, so I'm sympathetic to commuters. Thank you for your question. Next question.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Again, callers, if you have a question for Congressman Farr, please press *3 and you will be connected to our screeners. Our next question comes from Peggy from Salinas. She has a question about health insurance premiums. Peggy, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Hello, Congressman Farr. I'm an educator in the LSL School District, and as you well know, the budget is horrendous right now for education, and the burden seems to be put on the teachers for paying for insurance premiums because of the attitude that the hospitals have here, that they don't need to give us a benefit of discounts. So,
you teach in the public schools?
Yes, in the public schools.
And you have CalPERS as your health insurance?
Well, actually, no. Monterey Insurance Group. CalPERS is the other. That's our retirement type thing. So no,
but
you have
the California health plan, the one that public employees have and teachers have.
Yeah, we have the Monterey McSig, which is the Monterey County. It's a self-insured insurance plan.
Uh huh.
But,
and so what you're seeing is that the doctors and the hospitals aren't accepting the insurance payments on that?
Well, Monterey is such a unique area that doctors don't necessarily have to. It's the hospitals that are not, they don't have to negotiate with insurance groups as willingly as other groups do, because we end up paying a higher, we're one of the highest cost insurance in the country. And our local hospitals, Salinas Memorial and Chomp, don't negotiate a reasonable amount, so that in turn comes back to employees in the area having to pay for premiums.
So your copay is higher than teachers in other communities because of the insurance plan you're in, or I'm not sure.
But not necessarily copays, but even just the premiums. Because
premiums are higher than, say, teachers
in
Santa Cruz County?
No longer can afford to cover those premiums, so they're putting them onto teachers, which means that with the state being in such a crisis right now, any increases we get, the districts are no longer able to pay for those premiums, so the teachers have to take that on as part of their income is being taken away by having to pay for insurance premiums. They're going up 10% for the next school year, and with the budget being in the situation it is, teachers aren't going to get salary increases, but they're going to be paying 10% more for their insurance coverage.
Well, I'm not. I don't know the specifics on it, but you know, your teachers' union negotiated with the school board your benefit package and the percentage of copay you have to pay. I'm sure that was negotiated and agreed upon by the union and by the administrators. And that's a contractual agreement. They can't just arbitrarily charge you different premiums. It's agreed upon. Now, if the prices went up, they could have shifted more responsibility to the employee. But certainly, I would, and as you indicated, that the hospitals do contract with the insurance providers, a big package deal to get, and the insurance companies trying to get the best rate possible. And some of these insurance companies, Blue Cross, for example, and I know in San Benito County was practically the entire insurer, so there wasn't much much options or wiggle room for San Benito County in trying to negotiate a good Blue Cross rate. I'm just not familiar with the situation of teachers and your insurance contracts in Monterey County. I'm going to look into it, but I want to just add that this is a good micro problem of what's happening all over this country, because we don't have universal health care. If everybody in this country were insured as we are in the Medicare system, we wouldn't have this problem, and we could be negotiating affordable rates, and healthcare wouldn't be a major concern because it would be taken care of. And until we get a president who will really advocate for that, it's going to be an uphill battle. But I think Congress has a vote to provide healthcare, but it has to also have the partnership of the White House. So when the new president is sworn in, regardless of who it is, we're going to be advocating in Congress for universal health care.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Callers, there's still time to ask your questions. Please press *3. And if we don't get to your question by the end of the town hall, you will have a chance to leave a voicemail for the congressman at the end. So please stay with us. Our next question is from Majorie Thomasberg about the Nurses Equity Act. Majorie, you are live with Congressman Farr.
Yeah, it's Marjorie.
How are you?
It's Marjorie.
How are you, Marjorie?
Hello.
Hello, Marjorie.
Hello.
This is Sam Farr.
Yes, It's Marjorie.
Yes, what is your question, Marjorie?
Thomasburg. I've been writing to you now for 4 years about the United States Cadet Nurse Corps. The bill is H.R. 3423. I'm just wondering how we're doing on that bill.
It's pending. I will, as my staff is giving me, telling me that the bill's pending, that I don't know whether you've asked me to be a co-sponsor of the bill. I will, if you want me to be, I will be. I certainly support it. And when it gets out of its committee, I'll have a chance to vote on it on the floor, and I can send you some email or slug mail if you want an update on the intricacies of the bill and the politics of the bill. But I appreciate your support of it.
Thank you very much, Congressman. I think we have time for one more live question. Again, those of you who did not get a chance to ask your question, please leave us a voicemail at the end of the call.
Hello?
Yes. Congressman, as the last question, I would like to ask you about a very important segment of our community, which is our veterans. I understand that Congress has passed some bills related to Veterans Affairs, and I would like it if you would talk a little bit about that.
Well, thank you for the question. We have, as I said earlier in the town hall meeting here, that we have 28,000 veterans in our area. We are very fortunate that we were able to get a standalone veterans clinic built at Fort Ord and we're going to build a much bigger, better one in the future. We have a veterans clinic in Capitola. These veterans clinics are drop-in clinics. They have full range of services, and they're linked to the Veterans Hospital in Palo Alto, which is a first-rate hospital, also affiliated with Stanford Hospital. So it's the healthcare delivery system is better than almost any place in the United States for veterans. It's, you know, they do have to go to Palo Alto, or an emergency can get into local hospitals. What we have done in Congress is to increase the funding so that, one, the bureaucracy of paperwork is moving faster. We have certainly provided benefits for prescription drugs for veterans, probably the best program in the country, because we're able to negotiate with the drug companies for that, which we can't do under the Medicare program for senior citizens, and therefore the prescription drug prices are cheaper. The Congress last year appropriated more money than for the veterans, all the veterans issues, than any time in the history of this country. And today we marked up another bill, and we've set the record again. So we're not, this new Congress under the direction of Nancy Pelosi is not letting down veterans at all. In fact, we're stepping up to the plate, because we expect that the veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are going to have very serious readjustment problems, a lot of PTSD. And we need to have our communities geared up professionally to be able to help them. I'm trying to work on getting veterans housing. Certainly the veterans cemetery at Fort Ord, I think that's a doable. It's taken us, we went the long route because we got pushed back from the state, we got pushed back from the federal government, but we found a solution by thinking outside the box, and I think that's going to become a reality. So if there's anything that's any leaf unturned, I have a full-time staff member in my office who handles veterans affairs. So I ask any veteran who's not satisfied with the answers they're getting to give our office a call. And I encourage every person with an honorable discharge to use the Veterans Clinic at Fort Ord.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We just have a few minutes left. Congressman Farr, would you like to offer any parting thoughts?
Well, let me just, I'm here in a hot, humid summer night in Washington, but it's a buzz, not just with insects. It's a buzz with this excitement that's going on in our country about our presidential election. And I just want to say that I've been in local office and federal and state office. I have never seen our country so excited about who is going to be the commander-in-chief, the next president of the United States. And to me, it's really inspiring, because this is a unique country in our election of government. It's a democracy that's unlike most democracies in the world, in that we don't have a parliamentary system where the party chooses the candidates. Here, you, the people, choose them. And you have the power. You hold the contract of people in public office in your hand, and you exercise that contract by going to the polls and exercising your right to vote. And I just want to encourage people. I can't imagine living in the United States, anybody who's a citizen in this country that isn't registered and participating in the voting process. It should be a requirement. I'm excited because the people are excited, because I know when we really get excited about who is governing and what they're doing, we can change things. And that's what it's all about. It's about changing the status quo on oil prices, changing the, you know, lack of affordable housing, a lack of affordable health care, lack of quality education for all, lack of good wage earners, benefit packages that are livable, you name it. And the questions that were asked tonight are all about those. And so I'm just encouraging you all to tap everybody you can possibly tap to get registered for this November election. It'll be a remarkable historic moment when we have a record turnout to elect a new president of the United States who will come to this town and set us on the new path of a new America. So thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
And don't forget our town hall meetings in August, where I'll be in your community in person, and we can continue some of these discussions. Thank you for listening tonight.
Thank you very much, Congressman. Callers, if we did not get a chance to get to your call, please stay on the line and leave us a voicemail and tell all of your neighbors that they can listen to the entire town hall at our website tomorrow morning at www.far.house.gov. Thank you very much, and have a very pleasant evening.